Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been declined.
Your unemployment benefits ran out 2 weeks ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left. Checks
2 weeks
left.
Ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money. Bad credit holding you back. Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Oh, I want
to
be rich.
Welcome to the broadcast. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And for this fabulous Saturday, January 29th, 2011, we are broadcasting live from the Log Mahal in Payson, Arizona. And like this Saturday, and every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the dual purpose of creating immediate financial wellness today and beginning that path to financial freedom for you and your family for tomorrow and the future. We do this 1 week at a time, one key at a time from our Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series, as well as bring you incredible guests, wonderful segments like our Millionaire Minute, Minutes on Your Money, and our Investor's Edge guests, our key guests, and then this week's key in its entirety, presented in the second hour, to help you and your family get your money mind right, so your wallet will follow. And I'm so excited about this week's show. We have two great guests. Peter Leeds and Doug Warshauer will be joining us later. And it's our Take Emotion Out of the Picture key. And this is the one thing that crushes us when it comes to money management, because we are not rational, logical beings that use reason and logic up front as a strategy in our decision making. No, no, no. We are 100% emotionally driven creatures that use reason and logic to justify our behavior after the fact. So in the second hour, when we get to our key, Take Emotion Out of the Picture, we are going to explore specifically what goes on in our heads and our bodies when it comes time to deal with money, and what goes wrong and what we can do to circumvent the emotional response, because we want to keep our passions in perspective. This isn't about eliminating emotion, because we want to be passionate about making money, but we want to be much more reserved when it comes to spending it. We want to make sure we're allocating our resources appropriately. And in the personal finance realm, for some reason, the emotions take over. We can be logical business people, but we could be illogical when it comes to money management for ourselves. And it makes me think of something my father used to say. He was a general manager for a linen supply company, and they would move him around from plant to plant where they were ailing, and he would be the one to go in and right the ship, figure it out. Yet he was constantly plagued with financial issues his entire life, and he would say, you know, I don't know what it is. I can manage a multi-million-dollar budget. I can pull a company from the red into the black like nobody's business, but I can't even balance my own checkbook. And the insight is the emotion. So we're going to talk all about that in the second hour. I'm so excited. And we're also going to have Doug Warshauer joining us, who authored the book, If I'm So where did all my money go? If I'm so smart, where did all my money go? So he's going to be joining us, giving us tips and tricks that go right along with today's key, take emotion out of the picture. Our Investor's Edge guest coming up this hour is going to be penny stock guru Peter Leeds, and he'll be joining us in a little bit to talk about the world of penny stock investing. I have seen it go sideways more often than I've seen it be successful, so we are going to have Peter help us navigate those waters. Now, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, each and every week we feature a trivia question. And our trivia question is based on a previous show. And this week we have chosen to take our trivia question from our midweek update that we had on Wednesdays. If you are not a part of those shows yet, you need to get on the groove, let me tell you, because that is our 30-minute broadcast, the Midweek Update, of tips, tricks, tools, and information that you can incorporate into your life right now to help you and your family get financially well. And this week's trivia question is from the Midweek Update, talking about buying in bulk. Now, sometimes buying in bulk can save us money, and other times it can be a big waste. If you name one of the items we mentioned that will save you money by buying it in bulk, you could be a winner of fabulous prizes. You could win a book from one of our previous show guests, or perhaps you could win one of my books, autographed and personalized, or financial coaching. It's your choice. All you have to do is call in, chat in, or email in to win. Now, the telephone number, if you'd like to call in, is 1-718-508-9002. That's 1-718-508-9002. If you are listening live from our Blog Talk Radio show page, you can chat in to win. The illustrious Elena DeFior, our program director, is moderating the chat room today. Pop in, say hello. Look at all the tips and tricks that she gives you outside of the broadcast to help you become financially well. And see if you have your right answer by chatting it in to her. And we will announce you on the air. If perhaps you are listening from our unlockyourwealth.com webpage, please send us an email to trivia@uywradio.com. trivia@uywradio.com. And you could be the winner of some fabulous prizes. My new book, Bushido Business, has just come out, and I'm so excited in it. It has my chapter on personal finance secrets for professional success, and I think you'll really enjoy that. It shows you how to take what we do each and every day and go to the next level so you can have a tremendous amount of professional success without your personal life weighing you down. This is extremely important if you are an entrepreneur as well. So coming up, we have some great Minutes on Your Money articles. We have Peter Leeds and so much more. But first, let's take a moment, shall we, and hear a word from our sponsors. You are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm Heather Wagenhals, your money mentor, and we will be back with more and Peter Leeds coming up right after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420. Or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your money mentor, your hostess with the financial mostess. And I'm so excited about this first guest we have on our Investor's Edge segment. Peter Leeds is the penny stock professional. He is the most widely recognized personality associated with low-priced stocks. Along with the help of his team, he publishes Peter Leeds Penny Stocks, an online service that has sold 35,000 subscriptions, making it one of the most popular financial newsletters in North America. He frequently appears on mainstream media, including NBC, CBS, CNN, Financial Network, Fox Business, and in dozens of other newspaper, radio, and internet outlets, as well as making his debut on the Unlock Your Wealth radio program today. Investing in penny stocks is one of the most lucrative ways to make money in the stock market, according to Peter. And investors are finding the best shares with the greatest upside potential while minimizing risk and avoiding the dangers. And he joins us today to help us navigate those penny stock waters. Peter, welcome to the broadcast.
Heather, it's great to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us today. I am a former trader, but I never did like the penny stock. And I don't know if there just wasn't enough movement for me. I preferred stocks in other areas. What do you say for those who are interested? They don't have a whole lot of money, but because the penny stocks are so cheap, they feel like they want to jump into the trading of the penny stock market. What advice do you give people first off?
Well, I agree with you about what you said. You know, when you get started, sometimes it's difficult with penny stocks. But the reason is that about 90% of penny stocks are not what I would consider to be good investments. You have to find the really good, high quality ones, and they're few and far between. But if you know how to find those companies, then you stand to profit very handsomely. So it's a matter of knowing what to avoid and knowing how to find the good ones.
What makes a stock a penny stock?
The technical definition is any stock that's $5 per share or less. So, you know, the companies we look at, sometimes they're 25 cents a share. Other times we're looking at companies that are $3, $4 a share. What we're trying to do is find those companies that are really high quality, that are trading much lower than they should be, and we're looking for stocks that are going to either double or triple, in our opinion, within the next 6 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm. And now tell me a little bit, in your newsletter, do you provide research and stuff like that, or is it just a kind of commonplace for other folks who are interested in it to kind of just get some current news?
Oh, we do all the research ourselves. We do what we call leads analysis. It's our own proprietary method where we look at just about every aspect of a company, because with penny stocks, you know, if one thing goes wrong, it can derail them. So you have to make sure that these are rock-solid, fundamentally strong companies with low debt loads, good management teams, proven technologies, patented patents, and they have the right kind of alliances in place. And when you find those kinds of companies, then you can, you know, rest easy with your investment. It should probably do pretty well.
Mm-hmm. So what makes you like penny stocks over regular stocks?
Well, you know, it actually started back when I was about 14 years old. That's when I got into penny stocks in the first place. And I just I was working pretty hard to make money, you know, pulling weeds and moving rocks and stuff. And I said, there's got to be a better way to make some money. I thought maybe I'll go to the stock market. That's what, you know, people seem to do. And I didn't have a lot of money, of course. And I was looking at the stocks, and I say, okay, I can buy 2 shares of IBM, or I can buy a couple shares of some big blue chip company. It's going to maybe make me 5 or 10% on a year. There's no value in that to me. What I wanted to do is turn the money into a lot more pretty quickly. I guess I don't know if I'm greedy or impatient, you know, either way. But that's how I got.
Or a healthy combo of the two.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that's how I got into penny stocks in the first place, because I realized that if you do invest in the right penny stocks, then you're going to do pretty well pretty quickly, especially if you have a small amount of money to get you started.
Now, what type of principles do you apply when you invest in penny stocks? Is it the same that you would evaluate a regular company, or are there other considerations that you need to make when evaluating penny stocks?
As I mentioned earlier, we use what I call leads analysis, and this could be applied to any company, no matter how large. But the thing is, the bigger something is, you know, the more energy it takes to move it. With a penny stock, one lawsuit or one lost client can actually really derail the stock, as opposed to, you know, Microsoft or Walt Disney. It's like if they get a couple lawsuits, it's not really going to affect the share price. So with penny stocks, it's almost like the exact same process, only you have to be much, much more vigilant and careful with them. You know, one thing goes wrong, it can actually be pretty tough on the company. But that's also the other side of that, is that's the beauty of it. If they do get, you know, they win FDA approval, or they get a new client, that can really drive the prices up as well.
Mm-hmm. I've made some good money and quick money, the impatient kind of money, on some stocks, and I don't always trade on fundamentals, and I don't really actively trade anymore. I kind of, you know, got away from that when they changed the day trading rules. But for 1 year, that's all I did. I didn't even work. I just kind of fooled around and did some stuff. And I had a lot of fun, and I made a ton of money doing that, just with some small movements and being able to double down in some stocks and, you know, buy some options and things. And you know, and I don't think I ever had a single company that their share was over $10, just because I wanted to be able to be spread out and I wanted to keep my money working, but I didn't start with much when I got going.
Right.
So when someone thinks about, okay, you know, I'm saving and I'm working really hard and, you know, I'm moving rock or I'm doing whatever, but there's got to be a better way, like you, and you said that. When you were 14, and someone's saying, okay, you know, I like what I do, but I just want my money to work alongside of me, and I'm willing to take some time and do some homework and figure out the market. What does somebody need to kind of get started, money-wise, knowledge-wise?
Well, Heather, what I tell people, because I get this question a lot, is that you need no money at all to get started. And what you can do is what I call paper trading, where you're just keeping track of imaginary money in real stocks just to see how you would do. And so you learn the techniques, and you know, say maybe have an imaginary $100,000, and you say, I would put the money into this stock and that stock, and learn about the market, learn about the stocks while you do that, and track how you would have done if you'd used real money. And then when you get to the point where you get comfortable with it, you start to see that, okay, my techniques, my strategies are working out pretty well, then you can be a lot more secure when you jump into the market with real money.
Mm-hmm. that sounds like a neat idea. And that way, you're not risking anything, and you get a chance to build up your confidence. And if you blow it, and you pick a bad one, you're not out either.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you get comfortable with the paper trading, now can you buy in odd lots, or do you have to buy? I mean, do you buy penny stocks differently than others?
Not really, no. They might have, you know, your broker might have higher commission rates for them, but it's negligible.
Mm-hmm. So realistically, what could somebody get started with? $100?
You could get started with a couple hundred dollars once you get in with real money. You know, I'd suggest, you know, have a couple thousand maybe if you want to get more serious. But the point is, you can buy a lot of a little undiscovered, undervalued company for a couple hundred dollars, and if it works out as you expect it to, it's going to wind up maybe becoming a few thousand, and then all of a sudden you've got some momentum and some more money, and you can spread it out more, et cetera. You know, it all depends on sort of what stocks you pick and how well you do, and that's kind of what our service does, is we help you make sure to avoid the 90% of stocks that we wouldn't go near, the ones that don't pass leads analysis, and we show you the 5 or 10% that we do really like and why we think they're going to double or triple in price and when they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these all real short-term holds? You're just looking for that double or triple and you want to get out? Or is this something that, you know, you're going to work to build the next GE or Microsoft or something?
Well, it really comes down to each of the individual investors. Like, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, we do have thousands and thousands of people who follow our guidance. And some of them are short-term traders, some are long-term traders. Myself, personally, I love getting involved with a company I believe in when it's, you know, just getting started and holding that company for years. Some of my best picks, you know, I bought at 80 cents that went up to split adjusted $60 a share. And that took about, 4 or 5 years. But it's just, the point is that the company started doing what I expected them to do, and they kept on just doing better from one quarter to the next. And one day they just, you know, it's basically like a nice trend. If you get involved with a good company that's growing and it keeps that momentum going, then you'll be in good shape, you know. So I'm a proponent of longer-term investing for sure. A lot of my subscribers are like I was when I got started, a little more impatient, and they're looking for something to turn over within, you know, a month or two. A lot of our stocks do pretty well in short-term as well, but the biggest gains we've seen have taken, you know, 2-3 years.
So I just lost my train of thought. So when you in your publication, do you have your picks? Do you also have a section for pans? Stay away from these. These are not performing.
No, we don't. What we do is we just tell you which companies we expect to do really well. We only want to talk about high-quality companies. And you know, that's something that I should mention to your listeners, that when you get involved in this game, there are a lot of services out there that are getting paid by the companies they talk about, and they cleverly disguise that they're getting paid so that you don't even realize it. They'll put out reports about companies where you say, oh, that looks good, and you invest in it, but they're really just driving the price up because they're getting paid by the company to do so.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is we have an 100% unbiased guarantee, meaning that any stock pick that we talk about, we don't receive bribes or compensation of any kind from them, and we just are putting out information in your best interest.
And you're just a publisher. You don't trade. You don't have a brokerage, nothing.
Personally, I trade, but I'm...
But you don't trade for people that you're recommending for.
Exactly. We're just a publisher, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that should give your investors some confidence then, or your subscribers some confidence about the quality of that. One of my favorite publications, not in the money world, is Cook's Illustrated, and they accept no advertising, but they will test all kinds of equipment, all kinds of products, and they just tell you how it is. And that's one of the things that I like about that is because it's unbiased information, and they're not
exactly.
being supported by a manufacturer or something like that. So that brings, you know, some value to it. What are some basic things for people to start looking out for when they're considering the penny stock investment? What do you think? Now, you have your own proprietary formula, but what are some basic steps somebody can do to start familiarizing themselves with the company? What are the things that they should look for? Price earnings? They're probably not going to have any earnings if they're really penny stocks. So.
Well, I'll tell you what we do is with leads analysis, we look at the management team, where they worked before and how that worked out for them. We look at the financials, the fundamentals, like first thing we're looking at. What kind of debt load do they have? What kind of revenues do they have? Are those revenues increasing or decreasing? We look at some of the financial ratios depending on the type of company. We look at some technical analysis where about 10% of our research is, you know, the first 80% is fundamental, where we are looking for really, really good, solid, quality companies. The next 10% is technical analysis, which is looking at a good opportunity, a good buying price to get those shares at a discounted price. If they dip for no good reason, then that might be a buying opportunity. And the last 10% of leads analysis is what I call third level analysis, and that's when we're doing something that nobody else does. This is when we're looking at the differentiation of the product that they have, the branding, the positioning, how is their marketing and advertising helping communicate to consumers what kind of service or product they have, and how does that differentiate them from the other competitors? Do they have a competitive advantage or not?
That's great. That's a wonderful start. You know, I would always look at fundamental first, but I always, because I rolled stock, so I always traded on technical once I found one, and I would just kind of comb the papers, and I would just look down to see who had the biggest swings that day, and then whoever were the biggest gainers or the biggest losers, I just went and I researched those. That's how I started when I started picking my stuff to start trading. That's what I did. Is this an accidental dip or what's going on? And I thought, ooh, well, maybe I could capitalize on some stuff here.
Right, exactly.
But I like the idea of paper trading. I wasn't that bright. I just went right in.
As did I at 14 years old. And that's how I learned I should have paper traded to start.
But that's so impressive, though, to have done something like that at 14. I mean, I was mowing lawns at 11, and I didn't like that, but, you know, I didn't get inspired until the movie Wall Street came out, but I was 17 then. So.
Right.
That's when I'm like, ooh, stock market, greed is good, I'm so there.
So, I was always looking to run businesses since I was 9 years old. I would take the allowance my mom would give me, and I have three older sisters, and we'd go to the store, we'd buy junk food, chocolate bars and chips, and then my sisters would go home and they would eat theirs, and I'd put mine in the closet for a couple of days, and then I'd open the closet up and go, who wants to buy a chocolate bar? $2. Who wants to buy a bag of chips? $1.50. Yeah, it's great having three older sisters for some things, I guess, right?
Yeah, scanning them out of their allowances. That was pretty sneaky. That's clever. My brother was always trying to blackmail me. He was the kid that wiretapped everything and stuff. And he was like, you better give me this or else I'm going to tell mom. I'm like, no, right. Those little brothers, you guys are kind of sneaky. Oh, and I'm getting some Skypes from Elena saying, sounds like her brother, too. She said he would try to lend her money with interest when they were 7. Got to watch out for them little brothers. All those women that are probably listening, they're like, I had a little brother like that. That's so funny. I wonder if that's just like an innate little brother thing.
It could be.
So is there so what other advice do you think that people need to have, paper trade first, but what else is missing in the mix of successful penny stock investing that we really haven't chatted about?
Be true to yourself and understand that stocks at all, penny stocks also might not be for you. And if they're not, then don't try and force yourself to get involved with it. If you do decide that they are for you and you do get involved, then try and stick firstly towards industries that you know about, things that maybe where you work you would know more about that sector, and then that will actually give you an advantage over a lot of other traders because you understand where the medical industry is going or the restaurant industry is going. I would then definitely suggest that you do two things. Number one, you do your own due diligence. You look into anything you're going to invest in, like top to bottom, really seriously. But at the same time, you might want to get a little bit of help from a professional analyst who, has a 100% unbiased guarantee, like myself and my team, because, we're going to sort through, do a lot of the work for you, and put a bunch of ideas in front of you that we've already screened. Then you can look into those, do your own due diligence, and see if there's something that strikes your fancy or not.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. If folks are interested in getting your publication, can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, peterleeds.com.
And is there a phone number to call if they want to subscribe?
Yeah, absolutely. 1-866-MY-LEADS.
Ooh, I like that. 1-866-MY-LEADS. Well, thanks so much for stopping by on a Saturday and taking time out of your weekend to join us.
Heather, my pleasure. It's been great.
Outstanding. Thanks so much. And we always have the website for our show guests on our site, unlockyourwealth.com. Stay tuned for more. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We just had a lovely, lovely chat with Peter Leeds, our penny stock professional, and I'm so excited because that was great advice. And I wasn't sure what we were going to get because I have seen people make mistakes, and you know, and it can happen with any kind of stock, but I have seen people that didn't have any money and gambled what little they had, hoping that these penny stocks would take off, and it didn't really have to do with the penny stocks, but the people that were soliciting them. And so I really, really liked his advice where he said, you know, start paper trading first. What a great idea to paper trade, to pick it, be committed to it, and watch what happens. Because, you know, that way you can make the risk on paper without damaging your wallet. But, again, I would say this would be something that you would do in addition to your regular savings and spending plan if you were looking for something else to pass the time and augment it with. Because, like he said, It's all about the professional advice you get. So I'm excited. I'm actually thinking about subscribing to his publication because I like playing stuff like that. So I like to play stocks, and I haven't done it in a long time. And because I feel so out of touch with the market, I feel like, you know, where would I start? And so starting with a great publication would be the first step, and then the paper trade until you get your feet wet and you figure out your style and your strategy. So that was great advice. So thanks so much for Peter Leeds for dropping by. Now for some minutes on your money, shall we? The New York Times says Ford reports largest profit in 11 years. Straight out of Dearborn, the Ford Motor Company said yesterday that it earned $6.6 billion in 2010, its largest profit in 11 years. This is a result of surging global sales and cost cuts made during a lengthy turnaround. The fourth quarter fell short of most Wall Street estimates, breaking from a recent trend of positive earnings surprises from the company. The performance for the year, a substantial reversal from several years ago when Ford appeared to be the sickliest of the Detroit automakers, means the company's 40,000 hourly workers will receive profit-sharing checks averaging about $5,000. The checks required under Ford's contract with the United Auto Workers Union will total more than $200 million and are the biggest checks Ford has handed out since 2001. They ended the year with more cash than debt for the first time since before the recession. They said they eliminated 43% of its debt, even though they still owe $19 billion. And personally, Ford's chief executive, Alan Mulally, said in a statement that the 2010 results exceeded expectations, accelerating our transition from fixing the business fundamentals to delivering profitable growth for all. From October through December, Ford earned $190 million, or 5 cents a share, after taking the $960 million charge related to a debt conversion offer. It compared the earnings on $886 million to 25 cents a year, cents a share in the period of 1 year ago. So this is big news, but, you know, again, I'm going to share with you that the unions served a purpose back in the day, but we have federal laws in place, and we've come so far that I really don't believe that we still need the unions to have such a stranglehold. You know, probably, and I'm going to guess, and I'm going to speculate and talk out of turn here, but I'm going to guess most of those profits came from other than United States proper divisions, because all these automakers are profitable in other countries where they don't have unions. So, good on Ford for turning it around, and but yes, we've still got some ways to go with the unions. We've had overall, not just Ford, but general economic gains, but not enough to ease the job crisis. According to the Associated Press, the economy gained strength at the end of last year as Americans spent at the fastest pace in 4 years and U.S. companies sold more overseas. The growth is boosting hopes for a stronger 2011, but it remains too weak right now to ease the high unemployment. The Commerce Department reported Friday that the growth rose to an annual rate of 3.2% in the October through December quarter. That's better than the 2.6% growth in the previous quarter, and it was the best quarterly showing since the start of last year. And the economy has now consistently picked up speed since hitting a rough path in the spring. So we're seeing some neat stuff. How about consumer sentiment? It's late January, and the U.S. consumer sentiment has improved as hopes for a stronger economy and jobs worries are starting to cease. But rising food costs and gasoline kind of holding things back. Expectations of more cash to spend due to federal tax cut extensions and a temporary reduction on payroll taxes also brighten consumers' moods. The tax cuts, nonetheless, help to improve overall prospects for the national economy, including jobs prospects, says Richard Curtin, director of Thomson Reuters and the University of Michigan survey. Consumers' current mood recovered from earlier this month, but still was soured by gasoline prices stuck above $3 a gallon. So that is your minutes on your money. Stay tuned, shall you? Shall we? Because we have our Millionaire Minute coming up and our next guest, Doug Warshower, all on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, Industries.com. Like, go there totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your purveyor of prosperity, your money mentor, and guess what time it is?
Tell me.
Yes, it's that time again for our Millionaire Minute. This is the segment where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life right now, today. And on this week's Unlock Your Wealth Radio To Go show, we talked about overcoming fear. And this week, we are focusing on personal power. millionaires recognize that they must summon great strength to have the energy to pursue their every desire. Millionaires know over the masses that they must summon this personal power in order to accomplish what it is they want to see happen. They do this in three ways. One, they identify where they know their personal power comes from. Two, they learn how to harness that personal power to summon it on command when they need it most. And three, millionaires know how to direct that power for the greater good. Now, fully and completely integrate these ideas now. See yourself in this personally powerful way. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you. Imagine yourself harnessing these personal powers already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality. Now that's your Millionaire Minute. Be sure to tune in to our Tuesday show at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for an in-depth look at millionaires and their habits, including our Millionaire Focus strategy. On this Tuesday, we start our first of a two-part series on personal power. Start your day the Millionaire Way.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals on Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and I'm so excited. It is time for our next guest, and Doug Warshauer is on the line, and he will be joining us. Today, he is the founder of Kessler Warshauer Ventures, a highly successful private equity investment firm through which he invests directly in a variety of small, burgeoning businesses. He developed the techniques presented in his book, If I'm So Rich, Where Did All My Money Go? By modeling the prospects of hundreds of businesses. In his book, for the first time ever, he makes these techniques available to families to help them better manage their money. Doug holds an MBA from Kellogg School of Management, very impressive, a master's from New York University, and a BA from the University of California, Berkeley. He lives in the Chicago area. And you can follow along each week with his financial strategies or ask him questions. And right now, he is going to join us on Unlock Your Wealth Radio for the first time.
Doug, welcome to the broadcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Heather.
I'm so excited you're here. I love the cover of your book. If I'm So Smart, Where Did All My Money Go? With the house and the car and the other guy on the other side. And it does kind of seem like we're always on the other side of our money on that balance scale that you have on the cover. How'd you come up with that?
Well, because that's where it's going, right? It's going to the house and it's going to the car and it's going to pay your college education. And all of those things that you end up spending your money on is where your money is going. And so when you end the month and you count your money up and you say, my God, I know I made more money than this. Where did it go? Well, that's where it went.
And how do we come to the end of the month and just not know that?
It's a lot harder than it seems, really, to figure out where your money is coming and where it's going. It takes a little bit of work. And now is really a great time to do it. We've just finished 2010, and you can go back through all of your statements in 2010, your bank statements, your credit card bills, and total up all your money to really understand what did you spend your money on. And then the flip side is how much money came in. Go through your W-2 when you get it, and you say, how much money did I really bring home after the taxes and after all the things that get taken out, and see whether you spent more than you earned. That's the first question you need to ask yourself.
And so many people are going to answer that in a way that's probably going to surprise them, but they shouldn't be, should they?
Well, unfortunately, you're right. So many people are going to look at those numbers and say, I didn't realize I was spending more than I earned. Or if they thought they were saving 10%, they might find that they're only saving 2 or 3 or 4%. People don't have a great grasp over how much money is coming in and going out. But once you take this step and once you get a good understanding of how much money you're really spending compared to how much money you're really bringing home, it puts you in a position to make better decisions and take better care of your money and ultimately have more.
You know, what we talk about all the time here on this show is that we are not logical beings that use reason and logic up front to make decisions, but we're emotional creatures that use reason and logic to justify our behavior after the fact.
And retailers take advantage of that fact, don't they? They want us to use our emotions to spend and to buy, and so they give us things that just look so good. It's hard to resist them, and that's how we make mistakes. We make emotional buying decisions. We buy things that we want, and often we buy things that we need. But when you add up all of these emotional decisions, they don't necessarily tally up to where we wanted them to go if we had thought about it rationally. And so a big part of taking better care of your money is getting that rational side of you more in charge of your buying decisions.
You know, I finally sat down and watched Wall Street 2, Money Never Sleeps. It took me forever to get around to that. And I really loved – now, why I became a stockbroker 25 years ago was because of Gordon Gekko and Greed is Good and that whole speech that he gave to their shareholders when he screwed them over. But, you know, I took the value out of it, not his action – And I went forth because I used that as my motivator to change my current position. But what was so interesting was in his speech that he was giving in the movie after prison was it wasn't just greed, but it's envy and that entitlement mentality. And how do we get around that?
That's another one of those emotions that really drives us to spend, right? It is looking at what other people are buying and wanting what they're buying and wanting what they have and buying it for ourselves, driven by that emotion. And there are lots of emotions, really, that make us buy. But there's only one thing that makes us not buy, and that is the non-emotional side. That is, we need to give our rational side the power to control our spending. And that is really hard to do. But the way that we can get to doing it is by going through the process of figuring out how much money we want to spend in a variety of different areas. We need to spend some money on housing and some money on food and some money on clothing and some money on entertainment, but we need to figure out how much that some money is and make educated decisions that are right for our own personal preferences. Because what happens is if we don't go through this process and control our spending actively, we end up accidentally spending. And that's when the emotions take over and you see something that you want, and you might only want it at that point in time. If you had thought about it in advance and said, well, if I buy this flat screen TV that looks so appealing as I walk through Best Buy, if I buy this, I'm going to have to sacrifice something else. And that something else may mean more to me, but it doesn't mean more to me at that particular moment when I see it, because I don't know what I'm giving up. You need to be able to educate yourself so that you know the choices that you're making. And once you have that in the front of your mind, you can make better decisions.
I love your point, because it's totally relevant to this week's key, which is take emotion out of the picture. And to be passionate about earning money and being zealous about creating wealth, but then we need to keep those passions in check. And you just made me think of my high school economics class when he was talking about opportunity cost. And to being able to say, okay, yes, if I have this now, it means I have to forgo this. And if
that's right.
This other thing,
all about that.
Yeah, if this other thing is more important to me, I need to keep that in the forefront. Now, you mentioned a minute ago about you need to save so much for this and so much for that. Are there specifics for your house
Yes.
or for college or for retirement? How do you come up with those specifics for you as an individual?
There are specific benchmarks that you can compare yourself to. And it really helps to know the benchmarks. And in the book, I go through what the benchmarks are in each major spending category. And let me tell you a little about how they work. What the U.S. government does is survey a large number of Americans about their spending habits. And they put all that information together. And we can look at that information and see what average Americans spend on each category. And it turns out that people spend about 35% of their after-tax income on housing, and they spend about 15% of their after-tax income on transportation and about 14% on food, and so on down the line. And by knowing what those averages are, you can look at your own spending and say to yourself, does this make sense given who I am and what I care about? If I'm a car person and I'm spending 20% of my income on cars, and I know that that is more than average, but that's really what's important to me, that's perfectly fine. I will find somewhere else in my budget to cut back so that I can buy a really nice car, because that will make me happy. But if I don't care about cars, and I just went out and I bought myself a Lexus because, you know, I saw an ad and it looked nice and my neighbor's got one and he says it's a great car, I would have been just as happy buying a car that costs $20,000 less than that. And it turns out I'm spending 20% of my income on transportation, where my real priority is going out and having nice dinners, and I want to be spending a lot of money on food or living in a really big house in a nice neighborhood. You want your spending to be in line with your priorities, and knowing what these benchmark averages are helps you see whether your spending is in line with where you ought to have it, or whether there are areas where you're overspending, in which case that's a good thing, because that gives you an opportunity to cut back in the future and improve your lifestyle.
Well, let me ask you this, because my hackles are going up on my back, but are these are averages, that these aren't, this is what everybody's doing, but that doesn't make it right. I mean, those numbers are not where they should be at all.
It doesn't make it right for everybody. And that's really the key point. There's no right answer for where you should be, with the exception that you need to have about 10% of your income left over for long-term savings, regardless of what you're spending your money on. So you can devote an extra large portion of your money to housing and cut back on food or transportation or clothing, but you can't spend extra on everything or you won't be able to save that 10%. And you really need to save that 10%. That's the money that's going to enable you to put your kids into college, that's going to enable you to retire, that's going to enable you to do all the things in the long term that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, I mean, just mortgage, traditional mortgage underwriting guidelines before it went kafalooey with the mortgage market, you know, at 28% of your income was allocated, that was their maximum in their underwriting guidelines. You couldn't spend more than 28% on principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and homeowners association dues. So that 35% is way, I mean, this precisely illustrates why our country's in so much trouble, because our priorities are screwed up.
The 35%, I should clarify, is of your net after-tax income, whereas the mortgage guideline of 28% is on your gross income. And it does help people to think about their spending in terms of their after-tax income, because that's the money that you have. You don't get to choose what happens to the money that you get taxed on. That's gone first, right? So you want to think about your spending as a percentage of your after-tax take-home income. And, of course, 35% of that does not necessarily equate to 28% of your gross income, but it does account for some of the difference that you're seeing.
Yeah, I still think that the 28 is a much better guideline. But I feel like when we felt like we had to max our ratios, that's where the slope became real slippery. And everybody wanted to make bigger commissions. The realtors did, the lenders did. That's where they all kind of went nuts. Because they're like, oh, well, you can afford it. But, you know, those ratios don't take into account, do I send my child to private school? You know, do I have to, you know, commute because I'm buying a property out in the boondocks, and so now I've got an hour commute at $4 or $5 a gallon gas, and I drive a big Suburban that sucks it down at 2 miles to the gallon. So, I mean, anyway, I'm splitting hairs. But I think about those kind of things when we talk about those housing averages. I think that if we compared those numbers to other countries, it would be interesting to see where the other countries' priorities were in relation to ours.
Not just other countries, but you have to think about it in the geography that you live in, because there are certain parts of the United States where housing is extremely expensive relative to incomes. And those people, if you live in New York or San Francisco or a very high-priced housing city, you tend to be well above that 35% number, and there's very little that you can do about it. On the other hand, if you live in more rural parts of the country, it is very easy to keep your net housing expenditures under 25% because housing costs are much lower. So you do really need to think about what your options are, and the guidelines are really meant to give you something to compare against, to see how your spending compares with other Americans. Not that you need to be where the averages are, but that it helps you plan your overall budget and see where you might be able to find areas to save.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about savings, we always talk about a tiered savings strategy. How do you prioritize savings goals in your book?
The concept of a tiered savings strategy is really a useful one. And I like to encourage people to think about their savings goals and prioritizing their savings goals on the basis of time. What I mean by that is that think about what you need to save for relatively soon and make sure that you're going to be able to accomplish that goal by saving for that goal. And do that before you save for the much more distant goals. This is a little different from what we often hear told to younger people, which is they should start saving for retirement as soon as they get a job. And I discourage people from focusing too much on saving for retirement when they're real young, because there are a lot of things that you need to save for that come first. You need to, if you're just starting out, buy a car and then buy a home, and then eventually you're going to get married. You might need to save for that if you're going to be paying for your wedding. You're going to eventually have children and want to send them to college. You're going to need to save for that. And you need to think about all of these things that are going to happen in your life and how are you going to be ready to pay for them when they happen. If you don't save for the first ones first, what happens is we go into debt in order to achieve them, right? You're going to buy a car one way or another if you need a car to get to your job or to live your life. And if you haven't saved to pay for it in cash, which is really the most advantageous way to do it, you will be in the position, like most people are, of paying for that car by taking on debt. And taking on debt is really destructive to your long-term financial well-being.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's some great information. I have some more questions for you, but first we need to take and have a word with our sponsors. You are listening to Doug Warshauer on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and we will be right back with more coming up after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Doug Warshauer on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And before the break, we were chatting about prioritizing our savings goals. And Doug was sharing with us saving by what comes first. So if you're not advocating folks to start saving for retirement when they first get their jobs, when do they start adding those extra layers into their financial plan, like you were talking about cars and weddings and kids and college and all of that?
Right. You begin to layer those things in as you achieve that, those first goals. So the first thing that we talked about was saving to buy a car. Once you achieve that goal, once you have paid cash for that first car, you typically will not need to allocate any of that 10% savings dollars that we talked about earlier, the 10% over and above what you're going to be spending each year. You won't need to do that anymore. And so now you can start taking that 10% savings allocation and moving that to the next item, which is going to be your house. Once you buy that first house, you typically will not need to allocate your savings dollars toward that in the same way. So hopefully by the time people reach their early 30s, they have achieved some of these first saving goals, and then they can start thinking about putting their money towards the really long-term goals, their children's college education, and, of course, their retirement, which is the big one and which does require you to devote a substantial amount of savings dollars for it, but you can start doing that once you're into your 30s and still be able to achieve the retirement of your dreams.
Well, and hopefully by the time you hit your 30s, you're making more too, so there's more to stash away.
That's a big, big part of it. We put a lot of pressure on people when they're first starting off their careers, when we tell them that you have to save for a house and a car and retirement all at the same time, while you're at the very beginning of your career earning less than you're hopefully going to be earning all of your future years. You just can't stretch those dollars far enough, and it gets people into trouble in a couple of ways. It makes them very stressed about their financial situation and feeling like they're not achieving what they should be achieving, and it also forces them to go into debt to buy the things that they need now because they are devoting too many of their resources to things that they won't need to buy for a much longer time.
Well, I think we should qualify that criteria of need. Needing transportation and needing a $50,000 sports car are not quite the same.
No, they aren't the same. That's exactly right. But that brings us back to the first part of the conversation that we were talking about, which is prioritizing where you want to put your dollars and understanding how to make your money work the best for you. Good financial management is not only about sacrifice. It is really about figuring out what do you want the most, and how are you going to get those things that you want the most and not accidentally letting bad decisions get in your way?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had Charles Buffington III on, and him and his son co-wrote, he said it, I did it, Financial Lessons from My Father, and I loved when he said, hope is not a strategy. And it's my favorite quote. I say that all the time. Hope is not a strategy. And I think that that's where so many people get hung up, is they're going to do what they want to do and hope that it's going to happen the way they want it to happen. But without a strategy in place, it's slim and none. Now, yeah. I'm sure you get asked this all the time, and I always get emails. We see it in our forum on unlockyourwealth.com on the website. And people want to know, okay, so you're telling me I got to start saving, but I'm already in trouble. I've got, you know, debt up to my eyeballs. How do I save and whittle down my debt at the same time, or do I save and whittle down my debt at the same time?
In general, the answer to that question is you don't try to save and whittle down your debt at the same time. You whittle down your debt first. And you whittle down that debt as fast as you can. There are some exceptions to that. If your debt is a mortgage on your home, that is generally okay to keep. If you have student loan debt at fairly low interest rates, that might be okay to keep. But if you have credit card debt or other high interest consumer debt, you need to get that down. That comes first. That comes well before trying to save, because even the best investors can't make their money grow faster then your debt is going to grow if you're paying 15% interest on it. So you need to get that debt down, and you need to do everything you can to get that debt down fast, both for psychological reasons as well as for long-term wealth reasons. Once you get that debt down, it is much easier to make good decisions and to achieve your goals and to enjoy your life.
What about emergency funds? I mean, if we're so focused on whittling down our debt and then we have an issue come up and we don't have any emergency fund savings to pay for an unanticipated car repair or something like that, how do we keep from going back into debt on our credit cards?
It is certainly fine to keep an emergency fund. It's a good thing to have an emergency fund, but it isn't a good thing to have money in a checking account or some other low-interest account on a permanent basis, while at the same time you have credit card debt that is costing you 15% a year. That's a losing long-term situation. So if you want to build up an emergency fund and then get that debt paid down, as long as you're only going to have that emergency fund there at the same time as the debt for a year or two, that's fine. Go ahead and build up that emergency fund. But also recognize that a lot of people successfully use access to credit as a kind of emergency fund. It's not exactly the same, and it's not necessarily a perfect substitute. But if you have credit cards that you could use if you had an emergency, that makes up to some extent for having money in the bank. And when people understand that, that is comforting in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. I just think about the people that come to me that can't make that differentiation.
it's not for everybody.
And then all of a sudden these wants become needs. Oh, I had to have that new skirt.
And if the shoes were on sale. If you have trouble controlling yourself when you have access to credit and you just constantly max out those credit cards, then you might need to make the decision that the way to control that is to not giving yourself that access so that you won't run up your credit card bills. And there is not a one-size-fits-all answer for people when it comes to personal finance. You really need to understand yourself. And what I am hoping to do is to help give people the tools to make the right decisions for them, understand their personal attributes and the things that matter to them so that they can achieve their goals.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about whittling down debt, there are a variety of schools of thought of which way to go, how do we pay off which one first, how do we prioritize them. How do you recommend in your book, If I'm So Smart, Where Did All My Money Go? What plan do you use to whittle down debt?
Well, there's a basic concept that you see all through the personal finance literature, which is the debt snowball idea, where you identify one particular debt and you take all of your available resources and you focus on paying off that one debt. Now, some people will tell you that should be the highest interest debt that you have, and other people will tell you that it should be a low balance debt so that you can get it paid off quickly. I don't think it really matters what debt you choose as long as you follow the basic plan of identifying a single debt, paying it off, and then once that's paid off, you take all of the resources that you were devoting to paying that debt off, and you pick another one, and you switch all that money to paying off the second debt in your line, and you get that one paid off. And once that's paid off, you move on to the third and then the fourth. That program really works, and it has worked for thousands and thousands of people who are able to get themselves out of debt on this one-at-a-time basis.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned earlier when we were talking about regional spending on the housing category. Now, some places it doesn't make sense to buy. maybe affordability is part of the issue, and with rent controls, it's cheaper to rent than own, even with the tax, the loss of the tax benefits that you trade off for that. How do you know whether or not you should buy a home or if you should continue to rent one?
I think that people should not try to guess where the housing market is going. And that's normally the first mistake that people make when they think about the question of renting or buying. They think, I'm going to get in at the bottom of the market and I'm going to grow with the market and make big money. And the question of whether we should rent or own our home is really more of a personal one. It's where are you in your life right now? And here's the reason that you need to think of it that way. If you continually buy and sell homes, each time you go through that transaction, you are eroding about 10% of the total value of the home that you're buying or selling. Each time you sell a home, you have to pay your real estate broker 5 or 6%. In addition to that, you have transaction costs such as your legal fees, your appraisal, moving, taxes. All of these different costs add up to about 10% of the value of a home. So let's say you bought a home for $200,000 and you go back to that home and you're really, really excited about it and you're just starting to move in, and the next day your boss calls you in and says, I have a great offer for you, but you have to move to another city.
Yes.
And so you say, okay, I'm going to take this great career move, but I've got to put my house back on the market. One day later, I bought this house for $200,000. If I can sell it for the same thing I bought at $200,000, I'm going to lose 10%. That means I'm only going to pocket through this transaction $180,000. $20,000 is gone to these transaction costs and real estate broker fees. Well, if I, say, only put 10% down on that house, that $20,000 wipes out 100% of my equity. So that's a real disaster. If you don't stay in your home long enough for that home value to grow from $200,000 to, say, $280,000 or $300,000, buying a home is a losing financial transaction. The only way that you can realistically expect the value of the home that you live in to grow enough is to plan to stay there for close to 10 years, maybe even more than 10 years. So if you feel like you can be in a home for 10 years, it's probably going to grow enough for you to make money on it. And you don't have to worry about where the housing market is going in the next couple of years, because you've got a long enough time for overall housing growth to take place and you'll do well. But if you are in the stage of your life where you might need to move, either because you're planning on getting married or you've gotten married but you don't have any children and you're going to have children, you'll need more space, or your career is unstable and you think that you might get transferred to another city or find a totally different job, these are all good reasons to rent, because then you can be flexible. And if you need to move, you can move without suffering that loss of wealth.
Well, that's a great way to evaluate that situation, because so many people don't talk about those very things like job transfers. And if you are lucky enough to sell it, how do you do it? And maybe if you're being transferred to another side of the planet, it's very difficult to create an income property where you can manage it effectively, or find property management that doesn't continue to erode at what your investment is at that point. So that's a great way to take a look at that. Now, I can't believe it, are at a close of our time together today. We really kind of cranked through things. If there was one thing that you would want to leave our listeners with, maybe it's something from your book, If I'm So Smart, Where Did All My Money Go, what would that be?
Well, the thing I would most want to leave them with is the idea that you can make good decisions. Making effective financial decisions, using and spending your money wisely, is much easier than people realize. You simply need a few basic tools to help you make the right calculations for yourself so that you can know how much of your money should be going to all these different areas, whether it is housing or saving for college or saving for retirement. It is possible for somebody to understand whether they should be spending or saving 5% of their income or, say, 8% of their income for retirement at a given point in their life. And once you make that kind of a calculation for yourself and understand that you are on a right track to achieve your goals, not only will you achieve your goals, but you can feel so much better about how you're living and how you're managing your money. That in itself makes people live a more enjoyable, happy life.
Well, thank you so much for your time today with us. If folks want to get a hold of your book or go to your website for more great financial coaching, where can they find you?
They can find me at DougWarshauer.com, DougWarshauer.com, just my name. And, of course, you can get the book online on my website, at Amazon, at any of the major bookstores.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And for those of you that are driving around without a pencil or didn't catch the spelling, we always have all of our previous show guests on unlockyourwealth.com, so surf over and look up Doug so you can link over to his website. We've got so much more in store. Stay tuned for the Keys to Riches up next.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, Industries.com. Like, go there totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. As my cold fingers can't press the right button, you are listening to
The Keys to Riches on the Wagon Halls Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your purveyor of prosperity. We are already on our fifth key. The season is just flying by. I hope all of you that have been with us since the beginning of the year are still working on your assessment envelopes, and because we're going to get ready to pull those out in a couple weeks and get going on those and go through them. So we're on our fifth key in the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. We're glad to have you. The Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do that each week, one week at a time, one key at a time, as we work on all of the factors that affect your money, and specifically your money mind. Once you get your money mind right, your wallet will follow. And this week's key is so vital in that process, because this gives you the understanding or the basis, the foundation for which you make your decisions. And once we can identify what's making us do this stuff, we can then take steps to correct it and repattern. Because it's so good to be excited about money. It is. And to be passionate. However, we have to keep our passions in perspective. Here's the reason. There is an assumption on the part of the world that this is just something that we inherently know, because we don't actively teach it anywhere. We have Barney telling us to get along and can't we all be friends? And we worry more about emotional intelligence than we do about financial intelligence. And I beg the point that they're all kind of interrelated, because we are not rational creatures. Everyone expects us, because we have opposable thumbs and we have the power to not operate on instinct alone like animals. We have the power of higher thought process, and we can think in different terms, that all of a sudden that we should be able to logically take care of our finances. But that is so far from the truth. Okay, this show is successful for one reason, because we have the real answer to personal finance mastery. I am not selling you something new. It's not like you didn't hear or grow up or learn somewhere along the way to spend less than you make. All right? There is no magic secret. That is it. So if you are trying to manage your money and you spend more than you make, you've got to either spend less or make more. But in any case, you will not be successful until you spend less than you make. It's not like we don't know that. So what's the problem? Well, it's because we're emotional creatures. We are driven biochemically by emotion, and we use reason and logic to justify our behaviors and decisions after the fact. Good salespeople know this, that people buy on emotion and use reason and logic to justify. So a good salesperson isn't going to show you the facts and figures as to why you should buy this item. He will show you how you can successfully own this item and placate all of the emotions that are driving you toward this fabulous red sports car. And make it feel good and right, even though you just bankrupted your family by buying that item. Again, we justify with reason and logic after the fact. We are emotional creatures. We feel and we respond based on those feelings. Now, we want to be emotional. It's healthy to be emotional. It's great to share our emotions. But again, like I said in the beginning, we have to keep our passions in perspective. And for those of you that are just joining us this hour, I shared in the first hour, you know, my father used to always say, I can manage a multi-million-dollar company and bring it from the red into the black, but I can't balance my own checkbook. Let's look at that statement. What is it that makes him say that? Why can't he balance his own checkbook? It's all money, right? Numbers coming in, numbers going out. Why won't it balance? Well, let's explore what is the difference. The difference is the money he manages at work is not his money. He's not emotionally engaged to that money. He's financially engaged in the sense that he's got to get a paycheck. So in order to keep getting paychecks, he's got to do good work. So he's got to make the numbers work. But when he steps out of that arena into the world of personal finance as opposed to business finance, we throw all those principles that we know about business finance out the door. Why? Well, it's our money now. Right? We invested our hard-earned time, money and education perhaps, blood, sweat, and tears, toiling away for hours on end, and perhaps at a job that we don't particularly care for. So when Friday comes and that paycheck is handed to you, there is a sense of entitlement to do whatever you want. You worked hard, it's yours, by golly, and you're going to get to spend it however you want. And that's why you head to the bar with your buddies and buy rounds on you, because you just got paid, so woohoo, drinks on me, everyone. Or you go to the store and say, oh, my gosh, I'm going out tonight. I totally need a new dress. And, oh, my gosh, this handbag goes perfectly with it. And those shoes are on sale, so I should might as well get those, too, because I'm saving money when I get them. And on it goes. And then all of those obligations we made, all those commitments we made to other people when we borrowed money from them and promised to pay it back, we forget about that part because that's like a drain on us. Ooh, that's a bill. We have lost the gratification and the satisfaction that those bills had brought us. Now we have to pay those. We don't like that. I mean, we liked it when we spent the money, but now we don't like it because we're obligated to pay it back because we made a commitment. And if we just went to the mall, we blew it. Or if we went to the bar with our buddies, we blew it. Or whatever. Name your passion and your hobby, and you blew it. I go buy yarn so I can crochet. And I've got tons of yarn for projects that I haven't gotten around to doing yet. I know how it goes because it happens to me too. It happens to the best of us. But when it costs us more than what we make, it's a problem. But these problems don't always start with us. I know half of you are saying, what? You mean somebody else is to blame for my going crazy at the mall? And perhaps that's true. I'm going to share this story with you of a friend of mine I used to run around with years ago. And I moved and we lost touch because it was back in the day before all of this technology where you could connect with people. And I used to run around with her. And she would fight with her husband and then run to the mall and drop $1,000 that she didn't have, put it on her credit cards, buy all the stuff, and come home. And then he'd be more mad because she blew all this money. And he was working his tail off, and she made more than him, but she hated going to work because she had all these bills she had to pay. And she couldn't connect the dots. And she kept doing this and kept doing this. And it ruined her marriage. And as we were talking about it one day, I'm like, well, why do you always have to go to the mall after you fight? Why don't you just, like, not do that? Because she wouldn't go out and spend money like that any of the time. The pattern she was repeating started on someone else's watch. Her mother, when she was a child, would argue with her father. And after the argument, her mother would grab her and her sister and take them to the mall and go shopping. And they would come home with bags of stuff. And Dad would be mad, but it'd be over. The difference between Mom and Dad blowing up, fighting, sending Mom to the mall with the kids, blowing cash, coming home, and her fighting with her husband, going to the mall, blowing cash, and coming back home, was that her parents were rich. No matter how much money her mother spent at the mall, it could never damage what they had because they had so much money that they were still spending less than they make, even with her splurges. But how does a kid know that? A kid doesn't know that. All a kid says is, fight with daddy, go to the mall. Mommy's fight with daddy's, they go to the mall. They spend money. So this was the pattern that was set inside her head as a child and repeated over and over. So when she fought with her husband, amazingly always about money, didn't matter. She'd fight with her husband, off to the mall she went. Because that was what she knew. That was the pattern. It didn't occur to her to not do something different. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? It did not occur to her to do something different. So we're going to take a real quick break, and after the break, we're going to come back and show you how to circumvent somebody else's crappy programming. You're listening to The Keys to Riches on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show The Truth with Coca Brown on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation, 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, Industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. You, the Keys to Riches on Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And before the break, we were talking about emotional reactions to money. And specifically patterning beyond our control. So I know some of you are probably going, oh, you were shocked and amazed. Oh my God, I do that. Or maybe you have a similar story, perhaps. A story where maybe it's not that where you run out to the mall every time you fight with your husband, but maybe something sets you off, something triggers you, and before you know it, you're engaged in a shopping frenzy or a buying frenzy, or peer pressure is making you spend money, and you find yourself in this position, and then after the fact, you're like, oh my God, what did I do? Well, it's simply about patterning. And what neurolinguistic programming teaches us about modeling excellence is we have all the resources we need to achieve any desire we would like. It just may be that some of those resources aren't organized in a fashion that's benefiting us right now. I'm reading a book by one of the fathers of neurolinguistic programming, Richard Bandler. And it's all about perception and perspective. And he talks about how people who paint well and people who don't paint. And it's not that we all can't paint. It's just that we've been programmed to be told that we're not good at it. Or something has scared us into not trying because we're afraid of failing or something. And the only difference between that and somebody who's a great painter and knows that they're a great painter is the great painter sees himself in a different program. They function in a different way. So all we have to do as individuals when it comes to personal finance mastery is find out what it is that the people who have mastery over their personal finances are doing and find out where our disconnect is. Where our pattern takes us in a different direction and reframe it so we can engage ourselves in a different way. And one way to do this is through what we call in neurolinguistic programming a six-step reframe. And what we need to do is take a look at what sets us off into motion. Now, we don't have to go, oh, well, this isn't like psychology where you have to explore back and look at why. You just got to look at how it happens. What's the trigger that puts the pattern into place? And once you can identify what the trigger is, then we can replace that pattern with one that supports us health in a healthy fashion financially. Because it's all about choices. The difference between reacting and responding is this. Reacting is a biochemical response that happens under our consciousness. We can't feel it. It's just whooshing happens. And what we need to do is circumvent that chemical dump that makes us do the things that we do. Between stimulus and response, stimulus meaning the trigger that sets you off into your spending frenzy, and response, the chemical dump that says, buy this now, it'll make me feel better, I'll be richer, better looking, faster, stronger, whatever it might be. And in between, there is this space. And in this space is where we have the power to choose an effective response instead of just reacting emotionally from the chemical dump. This is where part of our power lies, is in this space. And when you are presented with a certain stimulus, oh, I got bad grades, my boss yelled at me, and you want to go run out and buy something to make yourself feel better because you think, oh, well, retail therapy always works. I'm going to go spend some money at the mall. What we need to do is identify what the positive intent and purpose is of that and create another pattern that gives us that same feeling to placate our emotions but without ruining our wallet, because that's the key. When you become overwhelmed, you can do something real simple. When you are at the point of impulse spending, what you need to do is jar yourself out of that emotional response. If it's already started, the chemical dump has happened, you need to take a step back and say, what is the ROI? ROI stands for return on investment. What is my return on investment in these shoes that I'm about ready to buy? Or this dress? Well, there isn't one because it stops right then and there. Actually, it becomes a depreciating asset because after you wear it once, you got to take it to a consignment shop and they're not going to pay you the full price you just paid. So you lost money on that deal. Whereas if I put this same $25 I was going to spend on these pair of shoes in an investment, that would make me money. And over time, it would be make me enough money to buy all the dresses that I want when I want them. So if you're spending your assets, your capital that you've worked hard for on a depreciating asset to gratify you emotionally so you feel okay, you've lost the power to earn income with that. Plus, in addition to losing that income potential that you could have earned by investing it, you've also reduced the amount of capital, cash you have. So it's a double whack. And what if that money was already earmarked to pay down another bill or an obligation that you have? Then what? So you got to stop and ask yourself, whoa, ugh, brakes. What is this doing for me? What is buying this item going to do for me? These round of beers that I just offered to buy my buddies, is it going to make me cooler in their eyes? Why am I doing this? Why am I buying this dress? And when you can stop and put the brakes on and figure out, is there an ROI? And if there's not, perhaps you need to put it down and wait a bit. Do a couple laps around the mall, shake off that energy of that chemical dump, and find something else that could give you the same level of satisfaction that the point of purchase in this emotional response would be. And do that. If you want an endorphin rush, don't use retail therapy. Go exercise. Goodness knows we could all use a little bit more exercise. So that's this week's key, to take emotion out of the picture. We want to be passionate about making money. Be excited about the prospect of creating wealth, both physically with our own blood, sweat, and tears, and putting our money right next to us, working side by side just as hard so we can spend the cash flow generated from the assets, not the assets themselves. So for this week's nuts and bolts for Take Emotion Out of the Picture, our key statement is, I know that if I desire to create true financial freedom for me and my family, I must keep my passions in perspective and be excited about making money and reserved when spending it on discretionary items. Our key affirmation for this week is, I am detached from emotion when managing my personal finances. I am detached from emotion when managing my personal finances. Pretend they're somebody else's. I'm managing my sister's money, my brother's money, my friend's money. This isn't my money. They need to stop spending in this category right now. Give yourself a checkup from the neck up that way. For those of you joining us for the first time, our affirmations are used to help reinforce our intestinal fortitude and help us get to our desires. Simply, we say our affirmations several times throughout the day, beginning when we end the day. Right before we go to bed, we say our affirmations out loud to ourselves to focus our subconscious minds on working to bring these desires to fruition. And we do that by building new neural pathways while we sleep. So when we wake up in the morning, we are rested and refreshed. We don't roll over and kiss the spouse. We don't let the dog out. No, what we do is we pull out our affirmations and we say them out loud to ourselves again to focus our conscious mind on our higher purpose of the day. It's not running errands, dropping kids to practice, going to school, going to work, whatever it is. No, our higher purpose is to create financial freedom for our families starting now. And then anytime you encounter negativity throughout the day, that's when you need to pull out your affirmations again. Do not let someone rain on your parade. Do not join their pity party. Instead, pull out your affirmations and go through them again to refocus your conscious mind, because what we think about, we bring about. And our key action item for this week is, whenever we find ourselves overwhelmed with emotion at the point of an impulse spend, we need to walk away, get some exercise, deep breathe, get some oxygen flowing, and allow ourselves to calm down and to be objective and ask ourselves this: is there an ROI, a financial return on this investment? Is this expenditure going to make me money down the road, or is this the end of the road for this dollar as I invest it into this material object, this depreciating asset? And we must start focusing on putting our money where it's going to have a return. To download this week's featured strategy, it is free for the next 24 hours for our key members. Our key membership is our free membership at unlockyourwealth.com. So surf on over to our website. Sign up if you're not already signed up. And you, too, can be a part of the Unlock Your Wealth financial freedom process. Our feature strategy is a six-step reframe that helps us identify what our motivations are that keep us impoverished and try to replace those with healthy money management skills. Thanks so much for joining us. I want to take a moment to thank our guests, Peter Leeds, the penny stock professional, and also Doug Borshauer, author of If I'm So Smart, Where Did All the Money Go? I would also like to thank the illustrious Elena DeFior for our chat room moderation. I know we were having some challenges there, but hopefully you guys got all of that. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and friend us on Facebook. And if you haven't yet gone to the Shorty Awards to vote for us for the finance category on Twitter, to share with the world why this show has helped you gain personal finance mastery, please do that at shortyawards.com/unlockyrwealth. I want to thank you, our incredible listeners, for joining us today, pursuing yet another key in the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series. Remember, our Tuesday Unlock Your Wealth Radio to Go is the first in our two-part series on Personal Power. Be sure to join us at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks so much for joining us. And remember, I'm Heather Wagenhals with the Unlock Your Wealth Radio program. And finally, financial freedom can be yours with Unlock Your Wealth Radio and unlockyourwealth.com. Thanks for joining us. And here's your financial independence. Go out and make it a millionaire day.